It's the 365 Days of Astronomy podcast. Coming in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the NASA Lunar Science Institute podcast, which highlights the latest news and information of the Moon, on the Moon, and from the Moon. It's produced by the NASA Lunar Science Institute at the Ames Research Center in Moffett Field, California.
The Lunar Grail mission has now ended as a smashing success. Hi, this is Nancy Atkinson for the NASA Lunar Science Institute. The Gravity Recovery and Interior Laboratory, or GRAIL mission to the Moon, featured twin spacecraft nicknamed Ebb and Flow, which have now provided incredible detail of the Moon's interior and the highest resolution gravity field map of any celestial body, including Earth. I'm extremely pleased to be joined today by Maria Zuber, the principal investigator for GRAIL. Maria, this has been a busy year for you, not only fitting in an entire mission, but also analyzing data and publishing your first results, and now bringing the spacecraft to a rather dramatic end with their impact on the Moon. At the start of the year, did you think everything could have gone as well as it has?
Everything went absolutely perfectly, and in my wildest dreams, I couldn't have imagined things going as well as they have.
Oh, that's wonderful. Could you share some of the science results from the Prime mission so far, which were actually just recently published, some of which were rather surprising about the Moon's interior and its gravity field?
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. So the first thing that we found is that the Moon's crust is considerably thinner than any previous studies have indicated. And in fact, it looks like there are places where mantle material may well have been excavated. This is the crustal thickness model that we published is the first that actually matches the Apollo seismic data. So we feel like we finally have a self-consistent geophysical knowledge of the crust. Another interesting result is we showed that the upper crust of the Moon is considerably more fractured than any previous thought on the matter. So it's understood, of course, that the surface has many impacts on it, and that would have broken up the crust. But the extent to which the upper crust was broken apart and homogenized really goes far, far beyond what anyone had thought before. And there's evidence that we have that some of these fractures extend many tens of kilometers within the Moon and probably reach within the mantle, which has considerable implications for, say, the heat flow on the Moon and how the Moon cooled off. Another finding was that we see evidence for large, very, very large, hundreds of kilometer long lava-filled cracks, 10 kilometers or more beneath the Moon's surface, that reflect a very early period of expansion of the Moon. And this expansion of the Moon would have occurred when the Moon had a magma ocean shortly after it formed, and the heat associated with the magma ocean conducting deep within the Moon and heating it up and expanding it. And this was actually predicted by models, but no evidence for it has been found. And we now realize that if any evidence existed, the record would have been erased by impacts. So the evidence that we have in terms of the dikes that we've identified indicates that the Moon's radius could have increased by as much as 5 kilometers. And I'd say finally, by knowing the thickness of the crust of the Moon now globally, we're able to constrain the volume of crust and therefore the abundances of certain elements on the Moon. And one which we chose to analyze was aluminum. And there have been different ideas for the formation of the Earth-Moon system, all based on the giant impact that would have the aluminum in the moon ranging anywhere from being very similar to Earth to being enhanced by as much as 50% over that in the Earth. With our constraints on the crustal thickness, we now know that the aluminum in the moon is similar to the aluminum in Earth. And that provides support for the formation of the moon by a giant impact, where the impactor mixes so completely with the Earth that the material thrown out is indistinguishable from the material that's left behind. So, and that such a scenario is actually published based on computer simulations by Robin Canna of the Southwest Research Institute just a couple of weeks before our papers were published.
What result was most surprising for you?
Well, it depends who you talk to. The dikes were certainly a surprise, but I think most people believe that just the extent of fracturing of the upper crust of the moon probably was the most unexpected result. And because it has implications for the moon, but it also has implications for other terrestrial planets as well, because all of the planets have been impacted in that way. You know, perhaps not Venus because of the thick atmosphere. It may perhaps somewhat less so, but we really need to start rethinking planetary evolution on the basis of what we've learned about the upper crust of the moon.
The two spacecraft were able to go into lower orbits around the moon for an extended mission. Could you share anything about the kinds of data and perhaps any insights that you were able to obtain during that extended portion of the mission?
So during the primary mission, we orbited at an average altitude of 55 kilometers. And during the extended mission, we took the altitude down by a factor of 2 and orbited at an average altitude of 23 kilometers. And then on December 6th, we brought the altitude down another factor of 2 and orbited for a while at an average altitude of 11 kilometers, getting within 2 kilometers of the highest points on the lunar surface. And those data are still being analyzed, so I can't share scientific results. But I can tell you that there's plenty of additional gravity signal we've detected, and so we expect further significant results in the future in terms of the spatial resolution of features that we'll be able to resolve. But the quality of the data is also very high, so we'll be able to look at some very subtle signatures. So stay tuned.
All right, that sounds exciting. Education was also a big part of the mission. Could you talk about the Moon Cam and its mission to engage students?
Oh, well, we are, as a team, we are so delighted with the success of the Moon Cam investigation. So each of our two spacecraft carried a camera and 4 camera heads to take pictures of the lunar surface, and this is the first time an imaging experiment has flown on a planetary mission that was dedicated 100% to outreach. So there was no scientific requirement or mission requirement that went along with the Moon Cam investigation. It was totally best effort, and those cameras were owned, so to speak, by students. We had over 200,000 students sign up for the program from more than 3,600 classrooms from the U.S. and nearly every state in the U.S., as well as 64 countries. And we collected, I don't know what the final tally is because we were still downloading images in the last several days, but over 100,000 images, student images, have been collected, and students in their classrooms downloaded software to target images on the moon This investigation was conceived of and led by Sally Ride, who unfortunately passed away this summer. But her company, Sally Ride Science, continues with this investigation. They have developed exercises that are online for, it doesn't end once the students get their image. They then analyze them in the classroom, and we also have a application on Google Moon where students who've taken images in a certain place can look at what images nearby were taken and who took them. And so classrooms are connecting and exchanging information about what they're all learning about the moon. And all these images are online at Sally Ride Science's website. And I've added some additional funding from our reserve so that we can continue this program to develop more exercises so that the moon cam investigation will not end, that this will be a long-term effort that students and teachers for many years to come will be able to access the images and the analysis exercises for use in their classrooms. And what we're so delighted about is just how excited the students are. They want to learn to use the software, but then really going the extra mile, they really did so many things with the images that we had not predicted. Students, teachers changed their curricula and they read books about the moon. They wrote poetry about the moon. They did art related to the moon. They studied the role of the moon in history. So this was just a starting point to a much broader effort. And all of us on the team worked very hard on this, and we were as delighted as we could be that it's worked out the way it has.
Wonderful. The two Grail spacecraft impacted the moon earlier this week on December 17th, which was a planned event and something you always knew was going to happen at the end of the mission. But was it hard to send the commands to send them crashing into the lunar surface?
Oh, we actually have a film of the last commands being sent to the spacecraft that I'll keep with me forever. So it was difficult to say goodbye, but if there's a Hall of Fame for twins, our Ebb and Flow should be elected because they made a huge contribution to science. They performed flawlessly. Neither spacecraft had an upset in their entire lifetime. They collected, we collected more than 99.99% of the data that could have been collected. And all of the data was flawless. So these two spacecraft performed wonderfully. And we set them down to rest, in the place that they knew best because they mapped it. Our twins mapped the moon. And so we found a very special place for them to rest out. And so we're just delighted that they achieved everything that they could have achieved.
Well, Maria, thank you so much for sharing your experiences with the Grail mission. And congratulations to you and your team on your successful mission. And we look forward to hearing more results in the future.
Great. Thank you very much.
To find out more about this topic, visit our website at www.lunarscience.nasa.gov. Any opinions expressed are those of the individual and do not necessarily reflect the opinion of NASA or the NASA Lunar Science Institute. This podcast is produced for educational and information purposes only. On behalf of the NASA Lunar Science Institute, thanks for listening.
You are listening to the IYA 365 Days of Astronomy podcast.
The 365 Days of Astronomy podcast is produced by Astrosphere New Media Association. Audio post-production by Preston Gibson. Bandwidth donated by Libsyn.com and Wizard Media. web design by Clockwork Active Media Systems. You may reproduce and distribute this audio for non-commercial purposes. Please consider supporting the podcast with a few dollars or euros. Visit us on the web at 365daysofastronomy.org or email us at info@365daysofastronomy.org. Until tomorrow, goodbye.